So this is a model where you have no oscillations of the scalar field phi whatsoever. And in this case, the standard mechanism of reheating simply doesn't work there, okay? So this model was considered strange model because you do not have any way of taking energy away from the scalar field, okay? Now, but in fact, maybe this is not so bad. And recently there was a paper by Peebles and Vilenkin reviving this model, but in fact the first person who have written a paper on this subject was Larry Ford. It was something like in 80 or whatever. And then there was another person with the name Spokojny who called it deflation. What happens here, your scalar field phi rolls down here, and then it starts losing its energy without any reheating or something, because what happens, this scalar field phi has its energy momentum tensor related only to its kinetic energy, because here potential energy is almost zero. And in this case, you can check that energy momentum tensor has a very peculiar form when pressure is equal to density with a sign plus. So it's opposite to pressure equal to minus rho for De Sitter universe, okay? So this is the stiffest equation of state, and in this case the scalar field phi loses its density, energy density, like a to minus 6 very, very fast if you compare a scale factor of the universe. If you compare it with the energy of particles which are produced by this field, if they are relativistic, then they lose energy like a minus 4. If they are non-relativistic, like a minus 3. So whatever small potato it was produced later, it will be very, very rapidly dominant. Okay? So this model is not entirely strange. Okay? Because the energy of the scalar field just decays very rapidly. That's it. So it's not impossible. So such models are not impossible. And in such model, one of them just was recently, as I said, studied by Vilenkin and Peebles. And they studied this gravitational production of particles here. Okay. So let's just check what happens in a model like that if these two scalar fields are not interacting. Okay. So what you have here effective potential as it is written. And if you add here additional direction, which is chi, then you have effective potential for the scalar field chi, which does not depend on phi, because these two fields are not coupled, and which have very, very small curvature here. And for those of you who study super, symmetric theories, you will see here flat direction, and you will see here another almost flat direction. Okay? So what happens there when the scalar field phi moves in this case? Well, let's study this simple theory, which is with a potential, of course, a slightly different type, but it doesn't matter. During inflation, I am moving here slowly, and here it may be lambda phi to the fourth, and here it is this flat. So what happens during inflation in this theory? We can check that during inflation, this field, scalar field phi, decreases like that. Okay, this is, going to 83, this is a solution for scalar field phi in chaotic inflation scenario with a potential like that, so I will not derive it right now here. And the Hubble constant during this time, measure it in Planckian mass equal to 1, okay, looks like that. This is Hubble constant in the square root of effective potential divided by Planck mass, which is equal to 1 right now. And then I want to study how this scalar field chi behaves. And there is an interesting thing. If mass of the scalar field is very, very small, then there is a known strange thing about the scalar field. It is growing like h cubed divided by 4 pi squared multiplied by time. It's a very strange behavior of correlator, and the origin of this can be explained as follows. You have inflationary universe, and in inflationary universe, long modes of the scalar field chi go acquire wavelengths greater than h minus 1, and once they acquire this wavelength, they freeze. They do not move anymore, they do not oscillate, they are treated like classical waves since that time. Then other modes freeze on the top of these ones, and then other modes freeze on the top of these ones. And what you get, these fluctuations, chi squared, each time h minus 1, new modes are freezing, and then when you calculate this chi squared, you will see this linear growth of chi squared because of this freezing of fluctuations. And interpretation of this is very simple. If you take a drunken sailor and calculate the length from the pub which he goes, which comes making n steps, then this L squared averaging will be proportional to the number of his steps. So this is the number of his steps. We have just Brownian motion over the scale of field phi. Okay, so let us then write down equation for the scale of field chi. And the equation, how it grows, will be like that. D of chi squared over dt is equal to h cubed divided by 4 pi squared. And this equation will be valid even if h is not constant. The previous equation was valid only when h is constant. Okay? The length of the step was constant, what was h. Now we have regime where h is allowed to change. But then we write down differential equations for it, and then it describes you how this chi squared behave in inflationary universe, chi squared for the field chi. And we plug in all this stuff here, and we will find out how this chi squared behave. And what we find out, that in the end, when inflation ends, if inflation started with the value of the scale field phi zero, initial value, then chi squared in the end will grow up to some large value. And if this large value is really large, if this chi is greater than 1 in Planckian units, then what we'll have is an interesting situation. This field chi in this direction, due to inflation, in average, will be somewhere either here or here, but somewhere at a distance greater than 1 or greater than Planck value. Okay? Yes?
Just one quick question. I wanted to make sure I understand. This is valid during
solo. Right. Yeah, so I'm right now studying how we prepare conditions for reheating. And what I say that if we start inflation at very large value phi zero, then when the field phi rolls down here, at this time already the field chi will have very, very large expectation value. Now, this expectation value should be understood as follows. Here I have this value of the scale field phi. Here I have that value of the scale field phi. In average, it is given by the square root of this chi squared. And if this square root of chi squared is greater than Planckian mass, then I zoom at this part of the universe. I say, okay, from my perspective, I'm living in the domain of the size h minus 1. I see that here I have scale field phi greater than Planckian mass, so the scale field chi, scale field chi will produce inflation locally. So that's important twist of, ideas. Idea was I have inflation driven by scale field phi, and I'm going to study reheating. But what I'm finding out, that due to this growth of these fluctuations of the field chi, instead of reheating, I am starting another stage of inflation. And this can be shown, this possibility occurs in many models of inflation. What happens that if initial value of the scale field phi is sufficiently large, then at the last stages you simply have another stage of inflation with respect to the field chi. Now, also, independently of that, you may just ask the question, what if initially you had the scale field chi large? And because you have scale field chi having effective potential so shallow, because our idea was we cannot produce by oscillation. This was if you have, no interaction between scale field. We have this oscillating scale field phi here, and it has sufficiently large mass. And this one must have mass smaller than Hubble constant in order to be produced. Well, if it's mass smaller than Hubble constant, then the condition for inflation here is that at the end of inflation, mass of the field phi becomes equal to the Hubble constant. Okay? So what happens is that in the scenario which I am interested in, mass of the field phi must be greater than the mass of the field chi. Now what I'm saying is that if you start with this theory, then the last stages of inflation typically will be driven not by this field, but by this field, by the field chi. So when we think about reheating, we must first formulate problem accurately. If we consider two fields which are not interacting, or two fields which interact just a little, because in this case the picture will not change dramatically, then instead of reheating, we will have a second stage of inflation. Okay? So we must distinguish what kind of theory do we really study when we think about reheating. Now suppose that we have interaction. And my argument right now is that interaction is important, in fact, to formulate the theory correctly. Okay? So suppose we have interaction between these two fields. Now, interaction, for example, simplest case, g squared, phi squared, chi squared. Then I have a potential which is large when chi large, large when phi large, but which vanishes along these two flat directions. Okay? This, if I consider only potential of interaction. Okay? Now, then, what are initial conditions for inflation in general? Well, the initial conditions for inflation, what is inflation? Inflation starts when you first are able to discuss theory in normal, well, language, which is smaller than Planckian density. And then smaller than Planckian boundary for this case is given by these parabolas, g, phi, chi of the order of 1. If you are here, this is the region of Planckian density. Because Planckian density is, this interaction is of the order of 1 in Planckian units. Okay? So these are just hyperboles. These are four hyperbolas which show you this is Planckian boundary, you cannot go in this region. And also you cannot go far away in this direction, because when you go to phi greater than 1 divided by g, then the mass of the field chi becomes greater than Planckian. Then we must go to string people and say, what do we do with this? But if we want to, well, just to work in the region where we more or less pretend to understand something, then this is this cross, and we start evolution of the field inside the cross, and we see how they evolve. So let us start. If we start here, inflation will be very short. You produce a small universe. If we start here, let's see what happens. If we start here, you, well, just a simple equation, trust me that I solved them right. But what happens? Here, the curvature of the effective potential will be at the, well, upper boundary of the cross. The curvature will be of Planckian order. And this field chi, Planckian means g phi, if it is of the order of M Planck, this is the upper boundary of the cross, okay? Then effective mass of the field chi will be Planckian. And this field chi will oscillate here like crazy, okay? Then if it oscillates, it will also lose its energy rapidly. Because you have your universe expands at field chi, loses its energy. And then you solve these two equations for these two fields, phi and chi, in expanding universe, and you find out the following regime. It's not published yet, so that's why I just printed here, okay, all this stuff. You find out that scale field phi, during this stage of rapid oscillations of the field phi, field chi, scale field phi still changes very, very slowly. And this is analytic solution for the scale field phi. A coupling constant enters here. If coupling constant is very small, then field phi takes a lot of time to change. So what happens on the previous picture, which I've shown you, the scenario can be explained as follows. You start here. You have this very rapid oscillations of the field phi, and the field chi, meanwhile, very, very small, slowly moves down. And then oscillations of the field chi die away because of expansion of the universe. And then field phi just rolls down in this direction. This is the way how you can formulate initial conditions for reheating. Because our one-dimensional motion of the scale of field phi can be explained in terms of this model, but cannot be explained in terms of this one. Okay? So it is just for formulation of the problem. So to formulate problem, we need interaction, and we need interaction to be sufficiently large. And on the other hand, coupling constant should not be too large in order to... yeah, please.
When chi is 0, why does phi roll at all?
Yeah, so everything does depend on the initial conditions. If you start your evolution here, then the situation will be vice versa if chi is 0, okay? I'm sorry.
I'm thinking after the oscillations in chi from where you started from.
Oh, okay, right. first of all, it never becomes completely zero. And second thing, then I would add to this some potato, which I, small thing, which I neglected before. I will say, okay, here is also massive term, m squared phi squared, which was much, much smaller than this one in the area where, well, these effects are serious. Then I will have normal massive, normal inflation produced by this. But it was necessary for me to understand whether the regime which I am considering make any sense. Because here are my initial conditions, and why do I think that my direction is one-dimensional in the potential like that? So it looks like this one-dimensionality is more or less automatically prepared for you in certain class of models under certain conditions, but it's not a generic statement. Okay? Well, now if we already are this way, that we have one-dimensional evolution, then everything goes as follows. We then, in order to study production of particles chi, we write down equations for this particles chi in the sinusoidally oscillating field phi, which oscillate already after inflation. So you had first one-dimensional inflation, and then after the end of inflation, you have one-dimensional oscillations. Now, if scalar field phi one-dimensionally oscillate, the mass of the field chi changes periodically. And of course, the way how it changes depends on what kind of effective potential do we have for the scalar field phi. If it is quadratic potential, then it is Mathieu equation. If it is quartic potential, then it's Lemay equation. In any case, you have periodic motion of this field chi, and here is the description of physics there. Physics is as follows. You have oscillating scalar field phi, and you have many oscillators sitting in the vacuum, or, well, quantum fluctuation of the field chi. And now when this one field oscillates, it may give its energy away to the oscillators which are capable of being in a resonance with it. Okay? But of course, if each oscillator would oscillate with a frequency equal to its mass, then it would be fine-tuning to have this mass equal to that. But it oscillates with a frequency related to its mass and its momentum. So for this one oscillating field, I can find such momentum over these particles for which they will be, they will have a chance to be in a resonance with this field, and then this will have this resonant production of particles from vacuum. When I say production of particles, I will say, take some of my words back later, because it's not particles really, it's a production of well, modes with exponentially large a number of particles sitting at the same level. So in some sense, it is semi-classical wave, but not always. So let me discuss it later. Right now, I just told you that this is, well, the basic idea of the new theory of reheating. And when we are going formal, we want to write, have some understanding of what is going on. If it is Mathieu equation, for example, we draw the plot of Mathieu equation and we study where we are on this plot and then see that there are some bands here for in some of these bands. If you, what means bands? You have some coefficients of Mathieu equation which depend on the momentum, which I said, okay, and on the masses of particles. And it is known that if you are in one particular in some parts of this Mathieu equation, then if you are in this band or in that band, in this relation between g phi and this g phi plus 2k squared, then in this case modes start growing exponentially. So yeah, there exists a formal theory of how the modes are growing there. But in order to understand, to have a feeling of this, you may just play with the computer a little bit, and you find out several things. There are two distinct regimes which are possible here. And at the moment, first, I am neglecting right now expansion of the universe, and then I will include it. And right now, no back reaction is considered. I'm just trying to, well, step by step introduce the subject. Okay? So suppose that G phi is smaller than M. What it is? G phi is the mass of the chi field. Okay? Because field chi, this other field, doesn't have its own mass, or at least we are working right now in a model where it doesn't have its own mass. And then mass M is the mass of the inflaton field in this parabolic potential. So suppose that this thing is much smaller than that. Then you can show that what we are talking about is a narrow resonance regime. narrow resonance looks like that. If we have some fluctuations, some modes of the scalar field chi with momentum k, those of the modes which are capable of growing exponentially, they will grow exponentially with a relatively small exponent, which is analytically calculable. You just take the textbook of classical mechanics, Landau and Lipschitz, and you find out how to calculate it. And you find out this type of curves. And when I was playing with computer, I generated a lot of these plots, and I sent it to Alyosha Skorobinsky to Moscow, and I received from him an angry message saying like that, "When will you start to work in civilized matter, etc., etc." And I did not understand. Okay, I was angry. Why he offends his own co-author? Well, but the point is that what do you calculate? Why do you calculate this delta phi? Whereas there is some quantity which you calculate better. And this quantity is adiabatic invariant, which is occupation numbers. Okay? So occupation numbers of produced particles. Whereas this phi and phi squared averaged, this green function, okay, they oscillate like crazy. If you calculate the number of particles produced, you will obtain almost straight line. So this is adiabatic invariant logarithm of number of particles growing exponentially. So this is something which a civilized person probably should calculate. And as I said, I was very angry at him. In the end, I was grateful, because when we start producing this, many things become more physical. You understand what you are getting there. Now, if you have another regime, and this regime, in fact, appears to be most interesting. This is a broad resonance regime where G phi, which is effective mass of the scalar field chi, if it is greater than M, then the regime is very interesting, and it was not studied in the textbook. Everything about narrow resonance you can easily find. Everything is about broad resonance. Well, there are some asymptotic relations. You know how people were writing books in the previous century. There were a lot of equations, and they were proud to get this lot of equations, and then you try to use them. It's incredibly difficult. And then what we produce just on mathematical, how these fluctuations of the field phi behave, they behave like that. And this was something which I was very proud of. But that's how they behave if you calculate this adiabatic invariant. So what happens? You have no particles, then of a sudden jump here, and during this jump you have some strange patterns which don't have any physical meaning, because adiabatic invariant is good only in the place where adiabatic regime is valid. Okay, so here it doesn't have any interpretation of number of particles, but here again it has, and here again it has. And what you see is that when the scalar field oscillates and comes to the minimum, you have this jump. Then it goes upwards, and there is nothing. Particles are not produced. Then it comes down, and again there is another jump. Particles are produced, and then again the number of particles is conserved. So you have parametric resonance, but it's a very peculiar step function where number of particles grows. And let me explain you the physics of it, because again it's possible to appeal to whatever analytical or non-analytical solutions of the computer, but what is the physics? The physics is very simple. Particles are produced in this case, not in the narrow resonance case, but in this broad resonance case. Everything can be explained by non-adiabatic change of the mass of the scalar field chi. I emphasize, not in the narrow resonance case. You know, we were learning slowly. Okay, so many mistakes have been done in this field and by us. You start these new things and you learn. We thought first that everything goes like with this narrow resonance. And then we understood that everything here can be understood by non-adiabaticity. Then we looked back and the narrow resonance, no, there. Narrow resonance cannot be explained by non-adiabaticity there. Even adiabaticity is enough, because you have this periodic jump. But here, even without, enhancement of number of particles is large at each step, and this large enhancement can be explained by non-adiabaticity. So what happens? You have here mass of the field chi, mass as a function of phi. Here is mass of the field chi. This is now non-adiabatic condition means that within one oscillation, the mass of the field chi does not change greater than it is. Okay. But I say one oscillation, and during this oscillation, the mass of the field chi does not change considerably. Then it is adiabatic. So this is similar to the conditions of applicability of WKB approximation. On one wavelength, nothing changes, etc. So similar things here. And this can be translated into the following equation. If m dot is greater than m squared, then you lose adiabaticity. Okay? Because m minus 1 is just the time of one oscillation. So if you multiply m dot by m minus 1, and compare it with them, that's exactly whether you will be able, whether your mass changes considerably during one oscillation or not. Now, I substitute here m, which is g phi, and this is g phi dot, and compare it with m squared, which is g squared phi squared. Now, what is phi dot here? Phi dot is, well, in the minimum when this field phi reaches this place. I can calculate this phi dot roughly simply using equation of energy conservation. What I say that kinetic energy at the minimum is equal to potential energy where phi is amplitude of oscillation. So potential energy goes to kinetic energy. So I can calculate phi dot in the minimum. Okay? So I substitute here this phi dot, which, well, which is given by this equation. You understand what I say? Okay?
Okay.
This is m phi. Okay, notation are, when it is simply m, then it is m of the inflaton field. When it is m with some index, then it is mass of the field chi. When it is m with the index and with a function of phi, then I specifically concentrate on how it depends on the field phi. Yeah. Now, so let me substitute these things here and check when this non-adiabaticity condition is violated. Okay. So I plug in all these things, and what I find out, again, this is simple algebra. I should not necessarily push you through it. What I find out that that adiabaticity condition is violated only here. Here is amplitude, and only here, in a small vicinity of phi equal to zero, you violate this this adiabaticity condition. This domain is small if m is smaller than g phi, but this was my condition of broad resonance. If g phi is greater than m, this is my broad resonance. So if resonance is broad, then particles are produced here in the small vicinity of the field phi, and that's how it looks. It looks like you have, every step which I have shown you here is a step where scalar field phi goes to the minimum. At this time, something happens and new particles are produced. And I spent so much time describing this because in the very end of my talk, I will tell about the new work which we have written about a month ago, which we called instant preheating. And where instead of this parametric resonance, which is so complicated, we will concentrate only on one event here. And then the number of particles produced will not be large. It will be just of the order of one at the levels at which it is produced. And still, in some cases, it may be sufficient for efficient reheating. So let me just go forward. But what I did, I explained the meaning of this. And then another thing which is also important for understanding of this broad resonance, how long it takes. So if we look at this red region where particles are produced, okay? If we look at this region, we look at the width of this region, and we know what was this phi dot. We just estimated here this phi dot. So we can calculate how long does it take for the field phi to be in this region. Okay? And it takes time, which can be estimated by the width of this region divided by phi dot. So when you make this estimate, you find delta t is very, very small like that. And then you use delta T, delta E relation, uncertainty of energy if you wish, and say, because the total event happens during this time, you can expect to produce particles of inverse of this energy, the square root of this. Okay? So this are some important features of this process, which can be either calculated and computed in a very, very complex way, studying these Mathieu equations, whatever, and it's really, really complicated. Or you can do it in this transparent way, looking at non-adiabaticity condition, and you find out this is a typical energy of the particles. Now, why is it interesting? For example, we will study the question whether we can produce super heavy particles in this model. How heavy? Okay. For example, suppose that these particles chi have their bare mass in addition to this g phi. Then nothing in this analysis will change if the mass of this particle chi is smaller than this quantity, because they will still be effectively massless for this kind of process. Okay. So we can produce by this effect particles with mass smaller than this one. Now you plug in the numbers M Planck, you plug in the mass M for the realistic version of this scenario, which is about 10 minus 6 of the Planck mass, and you consider limiting case coupling constant G of the order of 1, which is of course dangerous limit, but you can do it 10 minus 1, never mind. What I'm saying that by this mechanism you can produce particles in this case with the mass approximately 10 to 15 GeV easy. Okay? Now this mass M is 10 to 13 GeV. So by oscillating of the field with a mass 10 to 13 GeV, you can produce particles with a mass 10 to 15 GeV. It's very unusual. Normal perturbation theory will tell you you have particle with a mass 10 to 13 GeV and you can produce only particles with a mass 10 to 13 divided by 2. Decays to 2 particles, for example. Yes, please.
In this figure, the electric field is massless and you can create electrons which are massless.
That's exactly.
But there is an exponential suppression factor.
Yeah, that's okay. I will show you even exponential suppression factor later. Yeah,
okay.
Right. Yeah, that's very, very similar indeed. Okay. Now, let me just go a little bit further, because I actually wanted to tell you, well, different pieces for this story, but nevertheless. So if we include expansion of the universe, but still no back reaction, then what we will find out that actually evolution, okay, I should, in this order. Then what we will find out is something strange. You know, typically if you have a resonance and you push everything in the resonance, then you have regular jumps higher and higher. But here parameters of your resonance equation are changing because the amplitude of the field phi changes, universe expands. So as a result, what you have a set of jumps of the number of particles up, but some jumps down. And this jump, in the first glance, does not make any sense because, you know, you can produce particles, but you cannot eat particles. Okay, it's, you cannot decrease entropy. Well, but here you do not have particles. You have coherent state of, well, classical waves. So what happens that you produce classical waves and then you decrease the amplitude of classical waves. And that's what happens here. We call this effect stochastic resonance. And now, interesting thing, why it's so? I know that if I have a door and I will start opening it chaotically without any attempt to be in resonance with the door, typically it would not open. Okay? Now, what happens here, for whatever reason, in 3/4, and that's exact number, of all attempts, you jump up, in average, I mean, exact number in average, okay? So if you consider these oscillators, you may sometimes miss the phase in which you try to open the door. Now, in 3/4 of times, nevertheless, you bring energy to the system. So in average, the number of particles grow, but this looks like a very irregular effect which we call stochastic resonance. So if we just wait a little bit longer and continue calculation a little bit longer, that's how it goes. And then eventually the resonance stops because parameters change. And what started as broad resonance because I had here G phi greater than M, later this phi becomes smaller and smaller and smaller, the resonance becomes narrow and inefficient, and then eventually no particles are produced. In average, you oscillate somewhere here. But then also, even before this happens, typically, you must take into account back reaction. And there are several different types of back reaction. One of them is more or less controllable analytically. That's something which you can control in Hartree approximation 1 or Rehn approximation. Back reaction of created particles onto the mass of the oscillating field. Okay, so this is more or less doable thing. Now, another thing which is much more complicated is effects of rescattering of created particles. Because you produce particles chi, then these particles chi attack the oscillating scale field phi, produce particles of the field phi. And this is something which, if you want to study it, you go to Tkachev and Khlebnikov or somebody else who do numerical simulations on the lattice and ask them, please do it, and they do it even without asking. Okay, so so what happens that this process of growth, it ends somewhat earlier than what we have written here. But before coming to it, I will show you something. If we simply use Mathieu equation, neglecting expansion of the universe, here is momentum, and here is how the coefficient in exponent depends on the momentum. If momentum is small, well, just this is a sample of possible regimes. Momentum is small, then I have large coefficient mu. Then it so here these kind of particles are effectively produced, and also these particles are produced. Why these particles are produced just a little? Okay, so these correspond to these instability modes. If we go to the early universe and study this process in the expanding universe, that's how this coefficient mu depends on the value of momentum k. So this is the difference between stochastic preheating, stochastic resonance, and the normal Mathieu equation resonance. Why I'm concentrating on this, there was an article by some people who told that actually there is no stochastic resonance there, and everything can be described by Mathieu equation. And indeed, the average height of this function mu here, and here the amplitude is 0.1 or whatever. So if you want to make estimates, you do not care whether it's stochastic, non-stochastic, or whatever. But physics of what happens in the early universe is dramatically different from what can be described by normal Mathieu equation. So you should be careful about that. Now, if you want to be even more careful, as I said, if you want to take into account back reaction of produced particles, then you go and use lattice calculation, and that's what I think probably Khlebnikov will tell you about. Unfortunately, I understand that Tkachev will not come here. At least that's what I have heard. Okay, so these effects are important at last stages of resonance, at last stages of reheating. And before going further, I will tell you that if we, for example, have Lamé equation, then there are a large number of people who studied instability in these kinds of theories, and there are some graphs similar to the stability-instability graphs obtained for Mathieu equation. What we did not expect when we have studied this is that if we have theory lambda phi to the fourth, and just add there a little bit of mass, and it looks like, okay, you just made a very, very small correction. You add to the theory very small mass, so small that it is just lambda phi to the fourth, and you will not notice the difference that you add the small mass correction, such that m squared is much, much smaller than lambda phi squared. So you would not expect any change in the resonance regime, but this is a resonance. And there it is important that you have phases, and these phases may shift a little bit during oscillations. So small, small variation change everything. If you consider just lambda phi to the fourth theory in expanding universe, this is an ideal theory to study because it is conformally invariant theory. You can make change of variables such that effectively transform away expansion of the universe. And then you work as if universe would not expand, then you do not expect any stochastic resonance, because stochastic resonance appears because of the change of the parameters. But here nothing changes. Okay, so you add just a little of this mass to the theory, with mass squared much smaller than lambda phi to the fourth. And then you still get the stochastic regime with intermittent stages. Here you have expansion, here no expansion, growth, no growth, like that. And then that's how it works. If m is equal to zero, then you have these steps each time this number grows. If we have very small mass, we have stochastic resonance regime like that. So you should be careful studying these things and making conclusions about what you would expect, because resonance is a subtle thing. And then we classified all these regimes, and this classification was made without taking into account the back reaction, because it was just the first attempt to see what we can expect for these theories. And here are two regimes. Here is the theory m squared phi squared plus minus, and lambda phi to the fourth, and this coupling here. And we classify it for the case m squared greater than zero. And then on this plane, you have two things. First is amplitude of the oscillating scalar field phi. And second is ratio between g and coupling constant lambda here. Okay? Now what happens is that if phi is large and g is small, then you have normal stable resonance in the universe. G small, it is, this term can be neglected, okay? So, or very small. Then you have stable resonance. In this corner, when you have large G, you have stochastic resonance in expanding universe. Now, if phi is smaller than this ratio, then here is no decay, here is a stable resonance. I mean, there is a whole map of all various possibilities, whether there is a regime of resonance, whether there is no regime of resonance. And if we have a theory with spontaneous symmetry breaking, then we have still a different type of situation. And what is interesting, decay ends only, the final decay of the energy of the scalar field phi is possible only in this theory, in the model which I have studied right now with no fermions, okay, the model which was written. So the total decay of the field occurs only in this model, only with spontaneous symmetry breaking, and only in this corner of a relation between parameters of the theory. So if we want to have a complete decay of the field, complete reheating, it's a hard thing. It is not happening in many models. It's not automatic. You may even start with a resonance. This resonance will take some of the energy away from the field, and then you still have oscillating scalar field phi, and it will dominate energy of the universe later, and it will be a disastrous theory. So you must find out in which kind of theories this effect compatible with observational data right now. So it's another complication of the story.
Secondary decay, if both of them would decay to fermions.
No, what I say is that if the scalar field phi does not have a direct decay like that, for example, scalar field phi may have direct decay to fermions, for example, then it is easier to arrange a complete decay of the energy of the inflaton field. But if there are no such vertices of direct decay, which is a perturbative theory which we started with in this year 82, okay? So if this perturbative decay does not occur, then reheating is never complete, period. So you need to have these decays. Otherwise, you always have much more than you wanted of dark, dark matter, okay? So all the universe will be in this energy of oscillating inflaton field. So this is a pretty serious situation.
What a mental state. Triangle diagram in which phi
becomes a field. Oh, okay. This diagram is possible if you have spontaneous symmetry breaking. So then scalar field can decay to vectors. In this case, you can decay to fermions perturbatively. So only those theories are good in which a perturbative decay is possible. Okay.
Andrei, numerically with back reaction, that is, it decays sort of more often than you imply. That is even positive times squared, but
the
decay.
Yeah.
Numerically,
yeah, it's right.
Actually, I think one of the plots that you have shown from our work shows a complete decay of the field.
Oh, okay. Complete means your decay of the field becomes sufficiently strong so that you see that almost nothing remains.
Right, exactly.
Okay. Now, almost nothing remains means that if something remains, then this something later, when the density of all particles becomes very, very small, and then forget about all these interactions and all everything. You have very small number of particles. Then these particles can decay only by collision with each other. But because the universe expands, I mean, if there is no direct decay particle, one particle decay to others, then they can decay only due to collision with each other. But because the universe expands, this collision becomes more and more rare, and as a result, those decays become impossible, and you have always some frozen amount of scale of energy sitting in the scalar field, and that's a disastrous thing. So it is, how generic is the statement?
To avoid confusion, the zero mode of inflaton decays, but fluctuation of phi remains in this.
No, what I'm saying that even zero mode, you should be careful about it.
Right.
It
you carefully cannot distinguish between
right, between almost
nothing.
Right. Right, right, but because later it grows, as compared with relativistic matter, it still grows by about 20 orders of magnitude.
But your point can be made even stronger, because even in this case, I suppose, can be made stronger if you want to make it stronger. Even in this case, when decay of the zero mode is almost complete, the fluctuations of phi remain, and it's
right.
Obvious what is
exactly,
the
exactly. What happens is that what this plot shows that you have homogeneous mode, which we treat like classical field. But then what happens, you still have the scalar field phi particles. So these particles still need to decay, and it does not matter for you, for practical purposes, whether they are particles or whether they are classical field, because it is the same classical field except for it is decoherent. Okay, well, it's now I don't want to go to a discussion whether it's classical field, because it will depend on many things. Okay. Yes, indeed. Yes, those particles which are created, they practically all have zero momentum, and they will just stay there. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Now, so I guess I finished now with the first part of my talk. Okay. So it was about different models of reheating in a very, very sketchy way. And as I said, as for numerical calculations and many other things, you'll have here an expert who will tell you about that. Now, something about effects related to this, and this is in particular about phase transitions which may happen during this time. Why I'm talking about phase transitions? Well, suppose that we study the model with symmetry, spontaneous symmetry breaking. This model is a standard model with spontaneous symmetry breaking. Effective potential has a minimum at phi equal to phi zero. Now, if you write down how it looks, you see here this famous tachyonic mass. Should I stop right now? I don't know.
No. No, that wasn't the idea.
That's a difficult
question.
Okay. So I don't know. Is it the time which you warned me about that you make a stop at that time?
Well, I think coffee is coming at 3:15, so given the limited time, oh,
okay.
It's probably better than you continue if you can resist. It's not.
Yes. okay. Now. So look at this. The standard theory of cosmological phase transitions was working like that. Suppose you look at this term and you take a Gibbs average of this, and in this case, this phi squared will produce a term to contribution to the effective mass, which will be 3 lambda phi average squared. Okay, I should not tell you much about this because you just discussed similar things today in the morning. Now, so this is typically temperature squared divided by 12 if you have ultra-relativistic case. And what you see that you have a correction, positive correction, to the negative mass squared, and this restores symmetry if this t squared is very large. Now, if you want to have symmetry restoration in grand unified theories, you want to have temperature of about 10 to 15, 10 to 16 GeV. And as I said, in normal theory of reheating, you cannot have this 10 to 15 GeV. And the same thing in abnormal theory of reheating, which I just discussed. You simply cannot have so large temperature. But what you may have, you may produce these fluctuations, these large fluctuations, simply because of these long wave fluctuations which you produce at during preheating. They are not thermalized, these fluctuations. And what is interesting, they are larger than the fluctuations which would be produced by normal thermal effect. And why they are larger? Just let's make a simple estimate to get an idea. Suppose that you have theory lambda phi to the fourth, okay? And then everything ends at, inflation ends at the field phi of the order of M Planck. So then it goes to temperature to the fourth, so temperature would be of the order lambda 1/4 M Planck, something like that, in the most optimal, most optimistic case. Now, what will happen in the most optimistic case if I had a resonance here? Okay, nature is not most optimistic, but I just want to show the physics why something interesting may happen here. Okay, in the most optimistic case, what happens is that this oscillating field produces particles, and what is the natural frequency here? Well, if I take a square effective mass of the field, it is lambda phi squared. Okay, effective mass of the oscillating field is curvature of the effective potential, lambda phi squared. So effective mass will be lambda M Planck squared. This gives you a typical frequency of oscillation of the field at the end of inflation. Now, what will be the energy of the fluctuations of the fields, of the fluctuations which are produced by this field? Suppose just this, the same theory, lambda phi to the fourth. Now, forget about the field chi. Now I have only one parameter of dimension of mass here, this lambda m squared, and I wonder what will be the energy. The particles which will be produced, they will be produced with a frequency about the same as the mass of the oscillating field. So I would write expression like that for the energy of the scalar field phi. Why is it so? Well, you have, for example, energy can be written like integral d3k divided by square root of k squared plus m squared, and m, well, is of the order of k for the produced particles. Now, then you write here, this is y squared, this is d3k, and I am multiplying it by k in order to get to give you the total energy of produced particles, and I will relate these two things to each other. This is energy, and this is d3k divided by k plus mass, and the mass is of the order of the momentum of the produced particles, and this is phi squared. So if I put here k squared, which is the same frequency, lambda M Planck squared, then you will see that energy and this quantity, they are of the same order. I'm making estimates right now. So what I say that this lambda M Planck to the fourth goes into this quantity, where here I write lambda M squared, M Planck squared. So if I cross lambdas, and if I cross M Planck squared, then I will obtain that phi squared is of the order of M Planck squared. So it's absolutely huge phi squared. And the reason why it is so pathologically huge, it is as if I had here temperature of the order of M Planck. It's indeed extremely large. You never really get it in realistic situations because the process is not that efficient, etc. You get it smaller. But you can get it about 10 to 16 GeV. And that is something which you should study accurately, taking into account all this rescattering and everything. But why I'm talking about this, these naive estimates show you that here effective temperature is lambda 1/4 M Planck. And here effective temperature, if I would have it like temperature divided by 12 as before, then it corresponds to effective temperature of the Planckian scale, if everything is this simple and idealized. And in this case, I could be able to restore symmetry with the symmetry breaking up to the Planck scale. Well, it does not work this way, but nevertheless, this is a starting point where we started studying this. And we have encountered a lot of, difficulties and misunderstandings and whatever on our way, because in the end, in order to study it carefully, we needed all power of these lattice simulations, which will be described here by Khlebnikov later, I think. But before, yeah?
instead of populating the whole spectrum of nodes,
we are populating only infrared modes. And because we are spending the same amount of energy, but we are spending it for exciting only infrared modes, we are getting much greater phi squared. This is the idea.
So what we need is the fluctuation of phi. If I think about it, this oscillation is also sort of fluctuating, but in time. So if you average over time of the initial fluctuation, you have phi for the m prime. That's
sure thing. So you have a complicated dynamics. You have one part of dynamics is due to large initial oscillations. But then these large initial oscillations, they disappear. So then you expect, okay, large oscillations disappear. Then what do you have right now? What happens that when your large oscillations disappear, you still have this phi squared, which restores symmetry. I will show it to you.
At the beginning, broken symmetry, and then restore it.
I will show you the result. I will show you the result, you will see. But before going to result, let me show you some other things which tell you how you should accurately work in this area. Because indeed, questions like what you ask sometimes appear. And let me give you an example, the following example. Suppose instead of this chaotic inflation, I will study potentials of this type. Forget about inflation, just start and about even expansion of the universe. And this was a model studied by Boyanowski, Holman, and DeVega some time ago. You start from here, the scale field phi falls down, and then you produce symmetry breaking after that. And then what happens in this model in particular? How these correlators of the different fields behave? Well, here, for example, if this is a discrete model, you should be very careful what you are actually wanting to, what you want to obtain. Because, for example, if you stay exactly at the top of the effective potential, then in half of the universe you fall down in this direction, in half you fall down in that direction. And what you find out eventually, you find out the universe divided into domains. And in average, phi average will be equal to zero, exactly. So then if you want to see whether I have spontaneous symmetry breaking or not, and you study only this simple correlator, phi zero, phi averaged, then you always find out that there is no symmetry breaking in the model. And from the high theory point of view, yes, there is no symmetry breaking, except for locally, there's perfectly well-defined symmetry breaking. So we should study distribution of the field phi, not only this correlator or that correlator, or will be a question. For example, okay, this is not enough. Then let's study this phi squared. Whether it will be enough right now to study phi squared in Hartree approximation, in 1 over n approximation, whatever approximation, study this phi squared. Whether this information will tell us whether you have symmetry breaking or whether you not have symmetry breaking. For example, if this phi squared is 1, is it symmetry breaking or not? Okay. So then one of the very interesting results which was obtained by this group of people was the following. You start initially somewhat away from phi equal to zero, just a little bit, okay? And then the scale field phi start oscillating, just rolls down, and then it returns back, and then it stays near phi equal to zero. And that's true result, okay? So you look at it and you try to interpret it somehow. And first idea of interpretation, it looks like it's similar to symmetry restoration. And then,
I think what you are saying is not exactly what we did.
Okay.
I will talk about the mathematics.
Okay, but that's...
don't quote us.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. Never mind. Sorry. without respect to your investigation, it was simply interesting for us to see what happens. Okay. So we studied this numerically using this lattice calculation. So this is Tkachev results in this theory. And what happens? You start exactly at phi equal to zero. Okay. Then the scale field phi start falling down, and it falls down in the following way. This distribution grows. This distribution centered at phi equal to zero means you start at phi equal to zero, and then the distribution grows, which means that there are always some points which are staying at phi equal to zero exactly, and there are some of them which start moving down. Yes, please.
What is the number of special dimensions and what is the number of fields?
Okay, here we have two fields, it is complex field. So it's one Goldstone direction, okay? And it's a normal three-dimensional case, so three-dimensional. The distribution is a distribution in field space. It is one of the fields, phi 1, and there's another field, phi 2. The center corresponds to the top of the effective potential. So situation changes with each slide. This distribution grows, and then eventually something interesting happens. This distribution opens up.
Are you simulating the classical theory?
We are simulating the we are solving classical modes because during reheating that's okay.
I just want to know what you were simulating.
Right. Okay. Yes. Okay. So what happens? If this is a standard thing. What you can do during lattice simulations. Okay. Eventually what happens? You start with small classical perturbations, then it grow exponentially. Therefore, at each mode, you have large amount of particles. And because large amount of particles at each mode, classical approximation is legitimate. And what is possible then to get? You get this distribution of probability to find a particle, and you see there are now no particles at phi equal to zero. But average phi is equal to zero, as it should be, because everything is symmetric. So average phi is equal to zero. Average phi squared is equal to spontaneous symmetry breaking. And if you want to plug in this phi squared to the equation for the scale of field phi to see whether the effective mass is positive or negative, then in this model, in this distribution, you will get that you have no symmetry breaking, you have positive square of the mass because you have huge value of this lambda phi squared because phi squared is equal to 1 in this case. It's simply that you have spontaneous symmetry breaking in this direction, and that direction. In average, this scale field phi occupies this circle, and this phi squared is very large. So what I'm saying is that by studying correlator phi squared, in this particular case, if you just do this, and I'm not saying that you did that, okay, just let's remove from, well, I'm just saying the following. If we describe the situation like that, and we study correlators which you can obtain by whatever approximation, 1 over n, or exactly like that, then in what you find out something which you expect. You have spontaneous symmetry breaking, and this spontaneous symmetry breaking, nevertheless, from the point of view of God who looks at it, it tells you that phi average is equal to 0, and phi squared is equal to 1, and this phi squared, if you plug it back into equation for the effective mass of the scale field phi, it tell you that the effective mass of the scale field phi is positive squared because you have large spontaneous symmetry breaking here. And you would expect that then, okay, forget about it. I just wanted,
this,
I wanted.
Is that phi at a point squared expectation or is that the zero mode of phi squared expectation?
Okay, what happens that you do not exactly have k equal to zero in this situation. You have all kind of modes, but eventually, especially if the universe expands, then it becomes really k equal to zero mode. But what I show you, you do not need a computer to understand it. What happens that if you have spontaneous symmetry breaking, in one part of the universe you fall down in this direction, another part of the universe fall down in that direction, that's what you get. Okay?
So confused, what possible disagreement?
This is the key.
Excuse me? I'm just wondering what possible disagreement anyone could have with this picture.
No, I'm not telling about disagreement. Okay. Come on. I do not want to be provocative. I want to say the only thing that if you want to say that all my information is hidden in the Hartree approximation, then what you calculate phi squared, and in this case, this phi squared is equal to 1. And then you plug in this information into your equations. What do you have? You have phi average equal to 0. So you say, okay, this means that I stay on the top of effective potential because,
No, that is not what it means at all.
I mean, you could look at the two-point function, right? Not just phi squared at
that
point, but look at the separated one.
That's right. So what you need in exactly, you need a non-perturbative discussion because even two-point perturbation function will not tell you that what you are describing right now is a cosmic string. because appearance of a cosmic string is a non-perturbative effect, and you do not describe it using one or two or whatever amount of...
Why the rim looks so jagged?
Okay, because it is only 128 points per 128
okay,
points.
So
yes.
But where do I see the Goldstone mode and all that?
Oh, Goldstone mode shows in the fact that you have equal distribution in all directions along the circle. Because here, well, it's a different. Here this circle is phi 1 squared plus phi 2 squared is equal to 1. This corresponds exactly to the position of the minimum of the Mexican hat.
I understand that, but I mean, if you also said that when you take the phi squared and put it back into the equations of motion for the various modes, that you get a positive mass squared.
Okay.
Where is the mode that should have mass equal to zero when you add some phi squared?
Yeah, that's
where is the Goldstone mode?
What I am saying is that there are several different ways of operating with equation of motion, and I'm not saying that any of us does it incorrectly. I'm saying that if I would be me, not you, not, well, all your group of people, if what I would be me, I will look at this naively, and I say, okay, what I got, first of all, I got that phi equal to zero, because it is my first correlation function. Then I would calculate value of effective mass of the scalar field phi at phi equal to zero, and it would be equal to minus mu squared plus lambda multiplied by phi squared, right? This is polarization operator.
This mass is the mass of what would be the radial mode, the radial excitation, right?
This is a mass. This is a mass at phi equal to zero. There is no circular excitations at phi equal to zero. So that's what I will calculate. I will calculate this thing. I will see that I am at the point phi equal to zero. And I will say, okay, here is my phi equal to zero, and I am stable there. That would be my conclusion. So that's why I say that it is very dangerous to use this simple correlation. Of course, if you are capable, and if that's what you are doing, calculate all these averages and high momentum as well, then using this high momentum by very complicated construction, you may reconstruct something, even though I do not understand how, for example, you can reconstruct monopole or string by using this correlator. But that's a separate issue. What I'm saying is that naively, if I just look like a blind person on this, I do what I was doing all the time. I was calculating averages like that. I calculate polarization operator. I calculate this phi squared and take it from numerical calculations. And I will say there is no way for having spontaneous symmetry breaking here. But I do not want to say that somebody is doing something wrong. I'm just saying that being a naive person, that's how I would do looking at this. And I say, okay, I must do something else. And that's why what I'm saying, that these numerical calculations give you a little bit more detailed information than what you can get by using simple correlators or whatever else you want to use. Now, I guess that I am going away from, well, from what I wanted to say, but I want to say at least two things before the break, and then we will see how things go. First of all, I wanted... come on, this is a peripheral thing. Every clever person knows how to work to not obtain wrong number. I'm just saying that there are some underwater rocks, and we should, well, concentrate sometimes on them, but not now perhaps, because I want to show you something else. So first of all, there was a question, how all these fluctuations, original fluctuations, affect this oscillator, how this symmetry restoration, phase transition, which I announced, how it works. And there was a paper which we have written with Tkachev and Khlebnikov and Kaufman and Starbinsky on this subject. And recently we are concluding right now some other investigation of this subject, numerical, on the lattice. And the question is the following. Whether we have not only the phase transition, but something stronger than simply a phase transition. Not only the strong first-order phase transition. I hope that Sergei will tell you about that. But maybe we can have even something else. And what is this something else? Suppose that I have these light modes, which produce this large phi squared, about which I told you that we should use it very carefully, etc. Well, so suppose we produce this large phi squared, and this is so large that it puts the scalar field to the top of the effective potential, back to the top. And then if these modes are very, very soft, then they themselves may have very small energy. And then the scalar field phi will be on the top, sitting on the top with very small energy of fluctuations, then you may have new stage of inflation. Let me explain what I'm talking about. I'm writing. No. Here I have inflaton field, and that is inflaton field phi, okay? And that is normal effective potential. And we play it with potentials with spontaneous symmetry breaking about 10 to 16 GeV, so it's, well, pretty serious spontaneous symmetry breaking. Now, it starts moving down from these Planckian values of it, so initially you had inflation there. And then this field interacts with the scale field chi, another massless guy, whatever, with this simple interaction, g squared, chi squared, phi squared. And so it produces these fluctuations of the field chi. These fluctuations of the field chi goes to the equation for the field phi. This equation acquires effective correction to the effective mass of the field phi, which may restore symmetry, so puts the scale field phi to the top of the effective potential. And if energy of these particles present in the theory is small enough as compared to the energy stored in this scale field phi, then you may even have an extra stage of inflation there. And this is a very, very difficult thing to study, because if you have small coupling constant, then you neither have a symmetry restoration, nor you have this new specific regime which I announced. If you go to the regime of large coupling constant, then your calculations on the lattice become unreliable. When I say large coupling constant, don't say like large coupling constant for me is 10 minus 3 or whatever. So it is already large from the point of view of this theory of parametric resonance. There is some relation where I can trust the theory, where I can trust computer simulations. So when I go to larger coupling constants, I must calculate everything, and the lattice is not 128 per 128, but 256 or whatever great lattices. And even in this case, you should be very, very careful that everything works correctly. So we do not have 100% assurance in the fact which I am going right now to tell you about, but that's the picture which we are getting. Well, sorry for bad quality. It was an attempt. Yep.
What's the vacuum energy scale?
Vacuum energy?
I mean, you say you're going to do inflation at the top there. I want to know what that vertical scale is.
Vertical. Okay. I have lambda 10 minus 13 as we usually take. I have spontaneous symmetry breaking here, 10 to 16 GeV. So the energy is 10 to 16 to the fourth multiplied by lambda. This gives you the energy. Okay. So it's grand unification scale energy, less than that.
When you talk about grand unified phase transitions, it's the vacuum energy which is 10 to the fourth, right?
Okay, well, I'm not talking right now about
what the scales are.
Well, the scales which we are discussing right now is this scale, and this scale is 10 to 16, and when I'm saying about grand unification scale is the following. If we, for example, study stringy models of galaxy production, then the only thing which is important for you is not the height of the hill, but the amplitude of spontaneous symmetry breaking.
The relevant scale here is the Vance time to coupling.
It is incorrect.
Right. If your coupling's are small,
yeah, it is incorrect. If you study this model, and if you study strings produced in this model, strings independently of the coupling constant lambda, strings which produce your galaxies of our type require only one thing, the spontaneous symmetry breaking 10 to 16. Whatever coupling constant lambda, does not matter, they produce the same delta rho over rho 10 minus 5. Okay, just read the literature. No, it's absolute statement. Just read the books. Okay. Now, I'm sorry, but that's just the fact.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, so if you want to produce strings which will give you galaxies, the only thing which you need is this spontaneous symmetry breaking 10 to 16. If you want to produce these strings in this model, you must have temperature 10 to 16 GeV. Okay? Now, what I have... I'm coming to something, and then you say, well, it's symmetry restoration, it's symmetry breaking. What I have here is the following. You have here this scale field phi oscillating like that. When it oscillates, how do you call it? I do not care how you call it, whether it's symmetry restoration, symmetry breaking. It's oscillation with a large amplitude. Now, all of a sudden, on this graph, this one is this 10 to 16. So all of a sudden, your amplitude of oscillation becomes much less than 1. How do you call it? I call it symmetry restoration. Your amplitude of oscillations is practically 0. You cannot oscillate on the top of the inverted potential with the amplitude which is 3 orders of magnitude smaller than 10 to 16, right? So I call this regime, when you oscillate here, symmetry restoration, and this regime lasts for a long time, and then of a sudden you have a jump. And this jump is definitely symmetry breaking. You jump exactly to this point. So our interpretation of this is the following. But that's a question of interpretation, because you have computer simulations and you then try to get this and that kind of information of it. Our interpretation of this, and I do not insist on this, is that we have something like that with effective potential here. And that is, you are captured by the dynamical minimum which is produced here. And that is the same source of the first order phase transition which we had at finite temperature theory. That's exactly the mechanism of first order phase transition. And all of a sudden you have a jump and you have bubbles. And when we generated results of the simulations, we have seen bubbles. So this field phi appear at this region by expanding bubble filled with the field phi of the order of this 10 to 16. But what is interesting, then, when I take into account back reaction of these produced particles to the expansion of the universe, and I start seeing how Hubble constant depends on time there, then first you have normal decay of the Hubble constant. It decays as it should. Hubble constant and expanding... Yep.
How do you know that that's what's happening, as opposed to, say, the potential to flattening?
Okay. I do not want to insist on any interpretation.
Okay.
What
it's important, right? Because if you say it's barriers, then it's
okay.
Bubbles.
Okay, that's what we see. We see bubbles. Yes. Yes, we see the distribution of the field, period. There is no question that it could be flat potential and therefore you just equally spread everywhere. That's something which we definitely not see. We definitely see bubble. We see sometimes one bubble, large bubble, sometimes the seed of another bubble growing nearby and then shrinking. So the picture suggests this interpretation pretty definitely. So if you say there is no effective potential there, then okay, it's not what we see. Now, what is more important for me right now in the context of what I'm talking about, this Hubble constant, as a function of time, first it decreases as it should, because I have oscillating field, its energy decreases in the expanding universe, and then I have fluctuations produced, the energy also first a little bit grow, but nevertheless they decrease, and then all of a sudden this Hubble constant goes to a plateau. It stops decreasing, and that is because energy starts being dominated by vacuum energy. So you start having an extra stage of inflation because you stay here on the top. Well, unfortunately, I must confess that for the parameters which we checked it, this stage is extremely, extremely short. So this is what happens. And this point where the picture bends, this corresponds to the place where these bubbles appear. Okay? So the phase transition, you fall down to the minimum, then you have normal behavior. But what you have here, you have definite change of equation of state. And this equation of state approaches inflationary stage. But for the parameters where computer simulations are more or less reliable, and you know, it's a dangerous subject, but we made all tests which we could make, but we are not experts, okay? So we had only very, very short stage of something which, well, can be approximately called beginning of inflation. It's not really a long inflation, and I do not know what is going on if we take larger coupling constants. Our expectation original was that the inflation becomes long if coupling constant G, okay, the total rate of inflation is G, that's estimate, divided by lambda, G squared divided by lambda, to the degree 1/4. So in order to have any noticeable rate of inflation, I must have very large G as compared to lambda. This is okay, because lambda is very small. But in the case where G is very large, computer simulations will be unreliable. So we really need a very good computer and very good people to recalculate these things for us and all, whatever. Yes.
How many equals do you have there? It seems like
we have half of the fold. Yeah. So no, it depends. You know, if you are a little bit dishonest and you calculate on the lattice size 32, for example, okay, you have such a perfect inflation, just very well. I mean, just wonderful curve. And I thought, let me bring it here. Just, okay. I can't really do it. Okay. Then you calculate on the lattice 64, and you get more moderate inflation. Then you come to the lattice 128, and you get it less significant. Okay, but the reason is that we have some reasons to see where we are losing something. What happens that if we have larger lattices, then this effect of rescattering, which was studied by Khlebnikov and Kachov, becomes especially important. And this effect of rescattering kills these chi-squared fluctuations. It does not allow them to grow sufficiently large.
Larger couplings.
Excuse me?
Larger couplings. You said larger lattices. It's important for larger couplings.
No. What I say that larger lattices allow you to have a control at larger momenta, and this control over larger momenta of particles is important to study rescattering. So if you have smaller lattices, you miss some effect related to rescattering, and therefore your results are not as accurate. And what? Yes. Now, so what we see that if we take lattice 32 and then go to the lattice 64, we see that the spectrum of particles plotting the spectrum of particles which are produced, and we see that the spectrum of particles are cut. We see that we're cheating. But if we go to the lattice 128, we see that the ultraviolet part of the cutoff, which is responsible for particle production, is comfortably taken care by this 128 lattice. If coupling constant is small, then we take care of it. Even if we have coupling constant is small, then on the lattice 32 and 64, you still get reliable results. They do not change when you go to 128. If you want to have this reliable description of inflation, then at 128, it seems that we are comfortably already at the stage where we trust our results. But I'm just, I'm not telling you the truth. I'm telling you the results. Okay. Now, this is something which we obtained. We are trying to check it. The paper is still unpublished. What I'm saying is that we have a beginning of the stage of inflation. Why it could be interesting? Because this is a trivial model, nothing special. And here we may have something like thermal inflation, except for non-thermal here. Okay. Now, this stage may be useful, for example, for solving some of these problems with moduli fields or whatever. I do not know. For me, it was interesting because you would be unable to have the secondary stage of inflation in the state of thermal equilibrium. Because always, when thermal correction put you onto the top of the effective potential, almost always, the energy density is much greater than this potential energy density, and therefore, the expansion of the universe almost always, in the thermal case, is dominated by thermal effects. So you typically never get expansion there due to high temperature. Here, all of a sudden, you have a chance of having inflation due to this non-thermal phase transition, which is pretty interesting. Final thing. Yeah.
in these classical simulations, it's always the danger that you have ultraviolet effects, like the way the genes have. How do you check for that?
What means really genes?
That the short wavelengths start populating the classical field. In that sense, you take averages, they start to become sensitive to the left space.
What we were trying to do, we were trying to change the lattices, change the size of the lattice, change the cutoff, and see how stable our results of calculations are to this change. We are not really giving you any warranties because we are not experts in this lattice simulation stuff.
Yeah. State are non-thermal, so there is no religion catastrophe in the usual thermal
sense. Oh, in this.
It's important to us that verticality is related to them being
non-thermal. Oh, this one, okay.
Yeah. And exactly because these things happen at late times for couplings that Andrei apparently wants. The strong phase transitions happen at late times, not surprisingly, and that's why to go to later times, just as we discussed, you need giga lattices, and that's what he is saying, as I understand it.
Yeah.
But at late times, this ergodicity, you're simply more of the space of the field configuration,
right.
And you get shorter wavelengths.
Correct. The ground propagates to shorter wavelengths,
which
and
is
so they have to go to larger lattices.
Yeah.
To be confident that what we're doing at those levels.
Yeah, indeed, what he says is that we are trying to keep track on the spectrum of produced fluctuations. And if we see that the spectrum of you produce fluctuations with the wavelengths from this to that, and then if the spectrum is such that we see all the spectrum and that it exponentially decreases on the right and the left hand side, infrared in fact is not very important because infrared, if we lose infrared, then we only diminish effect. So if we lose ultraviolet, then we are in a danger of saying something wrong. So we are looking at the spectrum all the time, and we see that the spectrum decreases in such a way that in the ultraviolet regime we really have only vacuum fluctuations. So the particles still do not penetrate to this region. So we try to keep it under control to the best of our understanding. But as I say, give us people, or let us discuss it with you, and let us all make these computer simulations at a better computer, because we are applying for a grant. Please let us do something which I will do not only at my Intel PPC whatever. Now something which we can do without any PC, and this is the remaining part, and this is something which I think is pretty interesting and pretty simple, and we did not expect that we get something pretty interesting and pretty simple in the theory of preheating. So let us look again at this model, and let us concentrate only on the first act of particle production. So what happens, I described you, this is non-adiabaticity, and due to this non-adiabaticity, we have a jump in a number of particles here. So this is this intelligent way which Starobinsky tried to convince me I should work. Here it is nk as a function of time. There was zero, and then all of a sudden one particle produced during this time when this field phi crosses this point. Okay, now we can even calculate how many particles at each mode are produced, and here is the question. Okay, here is exponential suppression. If this particle sky have mass m, bare mass which doesn't depend on phi, then the possibility of producing them is exponentially suppressed. If I want to study particles with large momentum, they also exponentially suppress. So all particles which are produced, they are produced with k squared smaller than this g phi dot. Okay. Now, interesting thing. This equation does not depend on which theory do you study it. Lambda phi to the fourth, m squared phi squared, never mind. Everything depends on what happens in this vicinity. All particle production happens in this vicinity. The shape of effective potential at that time is not important at all. The only thing which is important is velocity of the field phi at this moment. And then you can integrate the total amount of particles produced, and you find out that if the mass is very large, then this effect is suppressed exponentially, and that maybe as well very good, because if you want to produce WIMPs, for example, weakly interacting massive particles, you can produce them massive, no problem. You can produce them with a mass 10 to 16 GeV, no problem, and they will be exponentially suppressed. Okay, because with 10 to 15 GeV, they will not be exponentially suppressed. Okay, but with 10 to 16 GeV, they will be so exponentially suppressed that only now they will reveal like a dark matter in the universe. It is a fine tuning. I don't like it. But any dark matter things with axion, with whatever, requires some kind of fine tuning. Now, let's move a little bit further. Here is what happens during one oscillation. And a typical picture was like that. You go here. You produce something, you go up, you go down, you produce something else. But what if these particles, what if there is no resonance? What if this coupling constant is so large that the produced particles decay fast or thermalize fast, and then there is no resonance? Okay, so this is a danger. Now what I'm going to do, I'm going to make something good out of danger. So let me take this field phi, field chi produced here, strongly interacting with something. Okay. For example, it may decay to fermions. So let's look how it happens. So these particles chi have been produced at this point. Okay. Let me just move a little bit further. Okay. There are some numerical stuff which is not very important. If we have some time and discussion, I will go here. But let me explain the meaning of what I'm going to do right now, because the idea is so simple. Suppose that you produce here this particle chi, which has interaction with fermions. Okay? So you have particles chi which can decay to fermions like that. Chi to psi psi with some coupling constant H, whatever, coupling constant. So the decay the decay is H squared multiplied the mass of the chi particles divided by A pi squared, whatever, mass of the chi particle. Okay? I'm writing here G phi. So in the beginning, these particles do not decay, in the beginning, when phi equal to zero. Then this field phi grows high, and then this phi grows, and then it reaches this M Planck divided by 10, and then particles want to decay. Now, if the decay rate becomes comparable with the time during which this field phi moves, then the field phi moves here, particle decay. Then when the field phi returns back, there is nothing to enhance. There is no resonance because these particles produced, they already decayed. Okay? But what is interesting, when they have been produced with this momentum, k of the order of the square root of this quantity, which is 10 to 15 GeV. When they decay, they have mass which is equal to G multiplied by phi, but phi is M Planck divided by 10, which is 10 to 18 GeV. Then if these particles decay, they can have mass which is as large as G multiplied by 10 to 18. If you take for fun G is equal to 1, you can produce particles with a mass 10 to 18 GeV. If you have G 10 minus 1, you have 10 to 17 GeV, whatever. This is animal, this is really a large particle. People who study this in Fermilab, they call these particles of the mass 10 to 13, they call them WIMPzilla, okay, to emphasize that size matters. So here we called them fat WIMPzillas, because what happens, you produce these particles chi, and then field phi moves, and these particles become fatter and fatter and fatter because their mass grows during the evolution of the field phi. And then they grow up to this huge mass, and then they can decay to a pair of fermions, and each fermion can have a half of this mass. So you can produce very super heavy particles. And moreover, what happens, these particles, while this field phi moves upwards, it passes part of its energy to the produced particles. So the total amount of energy which is released at this one point, it grows after the release. So you produce particles, and then you still give them energy by moving the scale field phi. So the total energy of produced particles grows after their production. Okay? So this considerably enhances the total amount of energy which you transfer to these particles. Now, then this field spirals down, oscillate again. What I'm saying, this one act may be sufficient to produce a relatively large fraction of all matter. So what happens if you estimate optimistically how a large portion of the energy of the field phi you can release at this moment, the ratio of the energy of released energy at this one moment to the energy of oscillating field is still suppressed by coupling constant with the degree 5 seconds. What if coupling constant is order of 1? There is no suppression. If it is 10 minus 1, there is a little bit of suppression. Okay, but now. And this is exactly the danger. Large coupling, this was a danger where parametric resonance may not work. So in the case where parametric resonance may not work, we still have something. Now this something, you produce super heavy fermions, then you transfer all energy to the super heavy fermions. Suppose that you have theory lambda phi to the fourth. Then you produce the super heavy fermions and they stay there and the energy decrease like scale factor of the universe to the degree minus 3. But energy of the oscillating field lambda phi to the fourth decreases as a to the degree minus 4. So the remaining energy of oscillating scale field just dies away. Okay? So you make one act and you hit the universe. And the whole thing happens within the time which is inverse 10 to the 16 GeV. So momentarily after this production, one event, universe is reheated, you don't need any lattice simulation, there is no classical fields, no problem with how you calculate this, well, averages, whatever. So very, very simple theory and everything solved in a pretty primitive way. And the most interesting consequence of this is in the context of these theories with which I started saying about them something bad. Okay?
You reheat the universe at a temperature which is
okay. No. You do not. get temperature greater than in a normal case where you instantaneously send all your energy to created particles. In the best case, you still get temperature 10 to 14 GeV. So you do not really create large temperature. What is important that the active part of the process of reheating of the universe may just occur instantaneously, then there is a later stage of later decay, perturbative decay of fermions which you produce it. So this is a very primitive theory, you can study it, no problem with this. What I do not want to tell you now, finally we learn the truth. I'm just saying that the nature has many different facets, and this is one other mechanism which we just learned. We did not expect it. It happened it happened like that. Lev Kofman came to the to Stanford University and we started discussing something, and at the end of the discussion he told me, okay, so let us just summarize what we learned today, because it was a very good discussion, and he started writing on the blood. Yeah. Okay, right. I will tell about this for a moment. So Lev Kofman started writing on the blackboard. So the summary of this day, first of all, that we must give up the idea of creation of super heavy particles during reheating. And say, Lev, just a moment. Okay, and here we have these particles produced with masses up to 10 to 18 GeV. Now let's see what happens in the theory of quintessence. You go with the scale field phi here, in a flash you produce particles here, particles chi, and then the scale field phi continue rolling. Because previously you had this upper bound for the scale field phi because it was oscillating only up to this value of M Planck divided by 10. But here it can just roll. Okay? So it can become of the order of M Planck or greater. Now if you have mass which is G phi, and G is of the order of 10 minus 1, and phi is of the order of M Planck or greater, then the scale of field phi grows, and these particles, either they decay on the way, or if they not decay, they of a sudden acquire mass, which is greater than the Planck mass, they become black holes. And this is something where people who study, string theory, they just cannot tolerate this thing. And what happens? When you approach this regime, where you would produce a black hole by this mechanism, this black hole which is produced as a Planckian mass, it just evaporates. So what happens? You produce particles here. All energy of the universe becomes concentrated in these particles because the energy of the scalar field decays like a to the minus 6. Okay? These particles, while the scalar field fire rolls in this direction, become black holes and evaporate. And you have still another mechanism of reheating of the universe by production of black holes. Okay, I guess I said enough. Yeah, somebody will tell. I'm glad that it's over.
If this
Everything really indeed depends on the shape of the potential. What I told about is that if this potential is just exactly flat or nearly exactly flat, then energy decays in the way I said. If it becomes almost exactly flat, and then it becomes exponential, whatever, there is a different regime of expansion. So in order to study everything in, well, for particular model, you get a different particular result. If you have just a simple, you want to have an idea. Suppose you have effective potential without a minima, and just flat, just to have an idea whether reheating is possible at all in this class of theories. And the idea for this class of theories was, yes, it is possible because, as you said, universe expands here with one speed, here with another speed, and you produce a little bit of something. Okay? How much do you produce? Well, unfortunately, you produce not so much because the particle production, it is total energy density produced of produced particles, which will be, it will be proportional to H to the Hubble constant to the force. It is, roughly speaking, R squared term of this type you produce. So you produce, why this is small? Because H to the force is V squared divided by M Planck to the force, if you check these numbers, that's what you will find out. And your total energy of particles is just V. So this V, always much, much greater than V squared divided by Planck density, at V much smaller than Planck density. So you can spend just a little bit of energy this way. Okay, so gravitational production can be important in this model also, because even if you produce just a little, nevertheless, all the rest later dies away. But this mechanism is by far, the mechanism which I described, by far, by many orders of magnitude, more efficient. For the coupling constants, which, well, I mean, everything depends. If you take coupling constant 10 minus 6, then gravitational production will be more important. Okay.